everyone says, how's life? 100 miles an hour.
Mm.
100 miles an hour. And I was like, when did that become the average speed limit?
Yeah.
All right. It's like, because, again, you increase the risk of, you know, crashing and burning, right?
Reckless. 100 miles per hour is reckless.
It is reckless, right?
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Chris Lovett is a minimalist speaker, mentor, and author of Discovery of Less, How I Found Everything I Wanted Underneath Everything I Owned. After years of collecting stuff, including clothes, debt, trinkets, and ideas that didn't serve him, Chris Lovett decided to let it all go. He sold the things he no longer needed, transformed his mindset, and reaped the benefits of decluttering his life. As a mentor, Chris helps people embrace less, unlock their potential, and find more time to nourish their souls. Chris Lovett. Am I saying your last name properly?
Hang on.
Okay, great. Okay. Author of Discovery of Less, and you are also a career mentor, professional executive coach, and simplicity coach, speaker, minimalist. You're all the things, Chris. So tell us, the minimalist lifestyle, how did you become a minimalist? Like, what were the life changes, or was there some event that propelled you to step into this minimalist lifestyle?
Yeah, thanks Ebony. And firstly, thank you for having me on the pod. It's an interesting topic because it's quite disruptive, right? Society says you're supposed to have stuff to be successful. You know, we collect stuff as we go through life. The home, the car, the job, the titles, the status. The more you have, the more successful you are. And I had all of that stuff, but didn't quite feel that it was me. It wasn't quite as successful as I thought all of that stuff would make me. And just got caught slap bang in the middle of a really large comfort zone. Like, you know, we've all been there, right? It's comfortable. It's snug. It's lovely. Everything's all safe and secure, but sometimes not as fulfilling. So, I had all these aspirations about wanting to go traveling and wanting to do a different job and, you know, all these types of things, but I was held back. And it was the stories that I was telling myself. It was all the debt that I've got myself in. It was the comfort zone that I was in. And so to do all of these things, like travel, like change my job, etc., I needed to let go of this old stuff that was keeping me tethered. And the old stuff just happened to be all my old junk that I collected, like my games, my DVDs, my CDs, furniture, stuff that we no longer used, but are desperate to keep hold of for some reason. And kind of selling that off initially gave me an immediate reward because I got some money out of it. You know, for selling stuff that I didn't need to someone who did need it, it gave me an immediate reward of money, which then equaled to paying off a little bit of debt, or paying towards a trip or traveling, etc. But then, as well as the money part of it, I started to feel a lot lighter. Mm. I started to feel that I didn't need, you know, 25 plates when there's two of us living in a two-bedroom apartment. I didn't need, you know, 250 DVDs of films, of some of which I'd never seen and never even bothered to watch. CDs that I didn't realise that I had. And when I look back and I was like, why on earth did I buy Silk the Shocker album, or, you know, all sorts of terrible stuff. But we're inclined to keep hold of it because it's ours and we own it. Mm-hmm. So once I started getting rid of stuff, positive things started to happen. So yeah, that's where it all kind of started, about 2017 time.
Yeah, 2017. Okay. Chris, why, and I know a lot of people, and including myself, I actually, so my mother, oh my God, she hasn't watched this podcast, so it's fine. But
I was going to say, is she listening or not?
She holds on to stuff like for years and years. And she's actually moving, in the process of moving. So
going is all the stuff moving with her?
She's actually getting rid of a lot of, I mean, she was paying for a storage bin because she just didn't have room in her apartment for the stuff. So she is shedding herself of a lot of the stuff. But I would look at that and literally living in a, when I was younger, living with her, and her room would be like, you could hardly move because there was just so much stuff. And so I purposefully said, I can't live like that. Right. But I do find myself collecting like shoes. I have clothes and shoes, I think, are my biggest downfalls. Right. Mm-hmm. Why do we, why are we obsessed with holding on to things or accumulating things? Does that help us feel better? Is that like a self-esteem booster, or what is it about?
Yeah, there's loads of things behind that, Ebony. I was in a similar situation to you. I loved buying Converse. Converse were my big thing. I had a stack of them. Again, clothes as well. So because I wanted to look different, feel different, stand out a little bit, I would buy quirky clothes, but they wouldn't really fit. So I would just leave them in the wardrobe, because one day, I'd get around to wearing that pair of shoes or wearing that t-shirt or wearing that dress or whatever it was. And that one day is going to be amazing. So what we do, we propel into the future, which gives us a reason to keep hold of stuff. But it's really interesting because there's a lot of psychology around ownership, mm-hmm. because we've been probably programmed a little bit. Maybe it's a bit in our DNA as well, when we were kind of cavemen and stuff like that. If you didn't own stuff, you were ostracized from the group, because if you didn't have, you know, stones to carve and, you know, utensils to eat, and if you didn't get part of the animal that the cavemen had just eaten, you wouldn't eat.
Mm.
So we became agreeable to the group dynamic.
Yeah.
And so owning stuff in almost like a new way of living is a bit like, it shows that we are successful to a certain degree. It shows that we are winning. We've got ownership of things, and we love to own stuff, especially us Brits. We love it. We've got a huge thing about owning property. We love to own our own home.
Yeah.
Whereas in different countries, it's a little bit more accepted that you can just rent somewhere and it'll be completely fine.
Yeah.
Whereas we see renting as a waste of money because we don't own the thing.
Yes, I
and so we're really, really attached to owning stuff, whether that's the latest iPhone, a watch, a car, and we've got advertisements that are mixed in with that, and they're paid billions and billions to try and get into our heads to say that you need this thing, you need this iPhone, you need to get this t-shirt to be successful. Because if you're not looking like George Clooney, Kendall Jenner, Oprah, whoever it is, you're going to get left behind. And but actually, there's a part of us that thinks actually there's another way to be successful, and it isn't by owning stuff.
Yeah, and that's totally true. The things we accumulate are like status symbols that we can kind of just flash at people and have them. We want to project a particular image to people,
right? Yeah.
That we are, as you say, successful. I think another reason, especially I've noticed with older people, thinking of my mother also,
yeah.
is there's. An attachment to things, like an emotional attachment to things. And
huge.
Yes. Yeah. And we just can't let go of the past. And so we hold on to these relics
Yeah.
You know, and that can be suffocating, like literally and metaphorically, like literally because you have this room full of stuff from years and years and years ago. And then like metaphorically, it's suffocating because you're holding on to all of those emotions and memories. And I'm sure that obstructs like clarity that you could be tapping into to make, you know, life decisions or whatever it is. So I think emotional attachment.
Ebony, you're there. You know it.
Yeah.
You've seen it. Maybe we're suffocated.
Yeah.
My parents were the same. There's a bit in the book, and I thank them for letting me share their journey, because when we came back from traveling, we lived with them for a few months, and then I realized how much stuff they had in their loft.
Mm-hmm.
That was just never used.
Yeah.
And it was kind of half emotional attachment, sentimental attachment to stuff, yeah, because there's memories in the thing, or how they led to believe that there was memories in this magazine or some old VHS tapes, but the memory was in them, not in the thing.
Yeah.
And also because of the certain generation, they didn't really know how to get rid of stuff. And because they would rather keep stuff than get rid of stuff, it was almost like there was no grey area for them, so they just kept it.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's so many areas where we can donate things to charity, we can sell it off, we can recycle, we can upcycle. All these are options now that maybe to our parents, they weren't really an option, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And so the only option was keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was too valuable to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that was emotional value or whether that was actual monetary value, but yeah, it's an interesting way to live, Ebony. And I've certainly had people say to me, well, no, I like my old board games, and I keep saying to them, well, great, keep them. You know, if they mean so much to you, keep the things, because it's not about being without, it's not about starving yourself of stuff, it's just about having the right stuff,
right
in your environment.
And I think what's interesting you brought up earlier is when you talk about decluttering, you're not necessarily just talking about like material stuff. Are you also talking about decluttering your life as far as maybe people, or just the accumulation of things, like, you know, I know education is important, but there are people that are obsessed with accumulating all kinds of certifications and degrees and all, you know.
Yeah,
So is that part of the minimalist?
Yeah. In the book, it almost starts when I say stuff, I literally mean anything. It could be the material possessions in the home. It could mean the social media stuff you have on your phone.
Yeah.
Even stuff that's going on at work. Like, so I coach a lot of people at work, and everyone's really, really busy. Like everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because we consume ourselves with so much work to do. But we probably don't need to do all of it. You know, maybe some of it can be reduced, or, you know, if you're going to a meeting, does it have to be an hour? Can it be half hour?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're consumed by not just the physical stuff that we believe that we need, but also everything that's happening in regards to our digital life, the emails that we subscribe to that we never read,
mm-hmm.
All of the mental clutter as well. So all of the stories that we've told ourselves and the labels that we've attached ourselves to, they all can potentially hold us back from doing the things, from being the person that we want to be. And that's what kind of happened to me. Like, all these stories that I couldn't do something, wasn't good enough, wasn't qualified enough, compared myself to other successful people. And so that kind of mindset just kept me perfectly safe.
Mm-hmm.
In a kind of a lukewarm life, you know, a solid 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
And which to some people, that's fine. You know, that security, that safety can be a real motivation for people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, big families, people need to provide for others. Security and safety is a huge motivation for them, and that's great for them. Yeah. For me, I needed a bit more, and I needed to mm-hmm. almost redesign what my identity looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was by getting rid of all the stuff.
Right. Yeah. Identity is a big thing too. We really identify with our car, our house, you know, all the little trinkets in our homes. And it's so interesting if like your car gets destroyed. Well, I think it's, if anything, like a car or house that gets destroyed, that's traumatic. But I think for some people, if your car gets destroyed or if your house gets, it's like a part of you has been destroyed, right? Or if like you have a favorite coat and something happens to it, it feels like, oh my goodness, a part of me has just died with this coat or whatever it is. Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah, yeah.
That is perfect. Great description.
Yeah. Well, it's just like little kids, right? Like little, they identify with their toys, and you know, something happens with the toy, you take away the toy, they have like a you know, a huge breakdown.
A meltdown.
Way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As adults. You mentioned feeling like not good enough, like we don't feel good enough. And I think that's so true. I mean, I can identify with that. I don't feel good enough. So I think if I buy this dress, it'll make me feel like I'm good enough for a moment until I want something else to replace that dress, or I feel like I need shoes to go with the dress or whatever it is, right? How do we, so in helping, when you help people to declutter their lives, do you go through any, how do you say, like, not psychological, but emotional exercises or something just to help them with their self-esteem?
Yeah, we do a lot of transformational stuff. So I always bucket it into two ways. There's the transactional stuff, which is where some people want to be. Just get rid of physical stuff because of the immediate reward you get, the money, space, calm. Once people get that, some people are just quite happy with that and go, that's all I need for now. I just needed some calm. But others, it's a huge transformational piece. You know, talking about what we were talking about earlier, some people have been stuck in the same job for decades and they just believe that that's all they can do. They can't do anything else because of the stories. Mm-hmm. It's too late to re-educate myself. It's too late to start something new. I'm too old. I'm not good enough. And so it's actually that some of the stuff that they surround themselves with, whether it's people, accounts they follow on Twitter, whatever it is, the physical stuff, it's a manifestation of what's going on inside.
Yes. Yeah.
So we use the almost like the physical act of decluttering to reset the identity and almost go right back to, what is it you want to be doing? Because you remember when we were at school, Ebony, we used to talk to a teacher and she would go, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
And we had all these amazing ideas, you know, firefighter, president, doctor.
Yeah.
But then something happened during life that took away all that ambition, took away all that bravery.
Mm-hmm.
And so we almost kind of peel away those stories
mm-hmm.
that society has put on us, and we go right back, go, what do you want to do? You know, if you had a blank sheet of paper, you know, no obstacles in the way, what would you be doing? And a lot of people are like, well, I'd start a new career, I'd start my own business, I'd go traveling, I'd start a family, I'd move home. And we go, okay, well, what's in the way? And then we start picking away at what's in the way, and generally we're in the way. We're getting in our own way,
right?
And whether that's with, you know, analysis paralysis, or whether that is with our attachment to the place we live or the work we have,
mm-hmm.
the people we surround ourselves with,
mm-hmm.
it's all of this big stuff that's keeping us cemented, keeping us tethered to the past, all the decisions of the past. And so we go through all of that. And I've had, you know, people have the light bulb on and go, well, yeah, I keep loads of car magazines. Why do I keep them? And I just asked the question back, so why do you keep them? And generally it's like, well, one day I might need them, which is the safety net.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like if I get rid of the magazines, something bad might happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that's a load of rubbish. Nothing right. bad is going to happen if you get rid of all the magazines.
Exactly.
So it just allows you to move forward in life and be present and start to plan what it is you want to do rather than be tethered to the past.
You know, I remember this was maybe 7 years ago or so, and I needed some clarity about some decision. I can't remember what it was. I knew I needed some clarity. And intuitively, I knew that if I cleaned out my car trunk, I would get the clarity, because my car trunk was like this representation of what was happening in my head. It was just all this junk, right? Mm, yeah, and yeah. And so I did. I cleaned out my car trunk, and I remember that really cleared up things for me. It's just amazing how that can happen. Like your physical, as you said, your physical environment, how you keep your physical environment is like a manifestation of what's happening on the inside of you. You also made a really great point about how when we're kids, we're very clear on what we want to be, right? I'm going to be a firefighter, or teacher, whatever. And then we go through life and it's like we're all the experiences that we have and some of the discouragement and the stories we tell ourselves about the experiences that we've had, they clutter our thinking and those things that we wanted to be as kids. That clarity just gets buried under all of those stories that we tell ourselves about what we've been through. And
yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And it's just kind of excavating. That's what it was. So I was talking to a, oh my gosh, what was it? He's a meditation coach. And we were talking about meditation and how when we meditate, actually I think his episode's going to air this week, but when we're meditating, it's like we're excavating through all that junk that our essential selves is buried under, right? And all that junk is all that, you know, the negativity that we've accumulated through the years. But that's clutter.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I'm definitely going to listen to that episode because, that's definitely another way of putting it, because there's so many metaphors and analogies, Ebony, that you can talk about. It's almost like, do you remember if you're looking for your favorite piece of jewelry, you have to find it under all your other crap?
Yes.
trying to, you know, people digging for gold,
mm-hmm.
right? They have to sift through the dirt, right?
Mm-hmm.
But can you imagine how easy it would be to find the thing you were really, really looking for if you didn't have all that other rubbish mm-hmm. to search through?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit about how you can almost redefine or dial up the real good bits about you.
Mm-hmm.
If you just get rid of all the other junk that you're carrying around in your metaphorical backpack,
yeah.
you know, that's causing pain on your shoulders and, you know, heavy. And you're wandering around with this backpack. And imagine if that was loads lighter. You could walk quicker. You could be to the place you wanted to be quicker without the pain. I mean, we can go all day with the metaphors already, can't we?
Right. Yeah. But I think literally, I think all of the stress like that the clutter causes us, so like all the emotional clutter and all of that, the stories that we tell ourselves, the burden that we are carrying metaphorically can literally manifest physically into all kinds of illnesses. I mean, that's what the root of most illnesses is, stress. So if you're feeling the stress, your body is going to, you know, start to break down in response to that.
Oh yeah, 100%. And there's loads of research that's been done recently, and people who buy the book, they don't even need to look past page 2, 3.
Right.
There's loads of stats about how clutter can impact our physical and mental health. So specifically around cluttered environments, people working or living in cluttered environments actually has a link to increasing in cortisol, which is the stress hormone. Mm-hmm. So it makes us eat poorer. So clutter makes us fat. Clutter makes us stressed.
Mm.
productivity wise, so if you're at work and there's loads and loads of stuff going on, your productivity drops. Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff has been researched, and you know, yeah, the story is great. When you match it up with all the research that's being done, both in the US and in the UK, this is a real issue.
Yeah.
And you know, our attachment to stuff and the money we waste and the damage we cause to ourselves, the environment, the economy, all that type of stuff, these are all huge knock-on effects. And it all starts potentially with those pair of shoes that we never wear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy that it can all start what's in your wardrobe.
Yes.
You know, but you know, it's not all doom and gloom, because there is huge positive impacts that you know, not only that you feel as an individual, but your family could feel as well. Because I've had so many people that have been like, Chris, I like to live more minimalist, but my partner is the opposite, and the stress that causes in a relationship is really quite difficult. Plus, if you're giving away or selling something that you don't use to someone who really will use it, you're adding value to the community, because that person's going to use that thing, and yeah, they're going to love it a lot more than you did.
Yeah.
Even donating stuff to charity, they're going to make a lot more use out of the thing, you know, the picture frame, the clock you haven't put up yet, all of these things than we're ever going to do, rather than keeping it in our garage.
Yeah.
So, there's huge positive knock-on effects to donating your stuff, selling your stuff, recycling your stuff that you don't use.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, for creative people, like writers and artists, starting to declutter can probably boost your creativity, because now you actually have, like, mental space to be creative. And did you find that when you started to declutter that well, first of all, was that what inspired you to write the book, or were you thinking of writing a book prior to this whole, like, minimalist
phase? I mean, I had no idea. I had no idea what I was doing. Yeah. It was all part of – I hadn't even heard the word decluttering. I hadn't heard the term minimalism. I was just selling my old stuff to get a bit of money to go traveling.
Yeah.
It then all snowballed from there, and I was telling this story to people and telling my friends – how much lighter I was feeling because I got rid of 100 odd DVDs that I never watched.
Yeah.
And the more people I would say and talk to about it, they would be like, yeah, I think I need to look, you know, they would have a look inwards and out of their own environment. And they would say, can you come and talk to my team about this? And so I'd be invited to go and talk in companies.
Mm.
And I'd be like, but why is anyone interested in my story about flogging a load of Converse trainers? But people were really fascinated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, and you compound that with changing a career, doing life differently, mm-hmm, selling off everything you ever owned. You're not supposed to do that. And then the more and more times I got asked to go and do talks, and more people would wait for me after the talk and tell me about their own stuff they've got going on. And then people would say, it's a really inspiring story, you should write a book about it. And I went, no. Mm. I failed English. So therefore, the story that I'm telling myself now is that I'm not qualified to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've written a few blogs, but I've never written anything to this length before. But then more people kept saying it. And I thought, maybe there's something in this. Maybe this story needs to go a little bit wider. And I started writing just some notes down in kind of November, October 2019. And I used the pictures that I had on my phone through traveling to kind of tell the story about having a sabbatical, going traveling, selling off everything. And so I'd write this stuff, and then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And I was like, now could be a really positive time to get this out, because everybody's motivations have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all gone through this big trauma,
mm-hmm,
and now we've been inside for a lot of time.
Yeah.
And did we use all of the things that we promised that we would use if we ever, if the electricity ever went out, we would have the board games to play when we could turn the candles on. Right. So all of these things that we gave ourselves a future story to use, the books that we were said that we were going to read when we had time.
Yeah.
We've all had time. Did you read the books? Did you play the games? If you didn't, now's a good time to give those things to someone else, maybe who's less fortunate. But everybody's now recalibrating a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going, phew, that was nasty. Things can change like that.
Yeah.
Whether it's your job, you know, your health, the people around you, and they're looking at life and going, am I really fulfilled?
Mm-hmm.
Or could I be doing more with what I've got, with my resources, with, you know, my financial resources, my energy, my time?
Yeah.
And now people are going, wow, I'm reassessing everything. And so now is the perfect time to for the book to come out and go, here you go, reassess whether you need all of that stuff in your life. Because if you don't, amazing, you can do all of these things. So as I was writing it, I was literally looking out my window in London and I was seeing people with bags and bags of toilet roll, you know.
And I was like, here, yes.
Yeah. And I was like, oh god, here we go. Yeah. And so people had regressed back to where society was a little bit out of control. We didn't really know what was going on. And so our response to that was to buy a load of stuff,
mm-hmm.
to surround ourselves in comfort so we could have a little bit more control.
Mm.
So it was just a really interesting time to kind of sit down and look out my window and write about less when people were wanting and getting more. And I had this whole thing about, do I traditionally publish or do I do it myself?
Mm-hmm.
And the timing of the book meant that if I traditionally publish, this might not come out until 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then by that time, it's a new normal. You know, maybe we've all, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, this is quite a disruptive way to live. Going with a traditional publisher doesn't really align with my values of being disruptive, living disruptive, working disruptive.
Uh-huh.
Let's disrupt the industry. I'll put it out myself.
Uh-huh.
So it came out a few weeks ago and, feedback so far has been super positive. And it's not that the book's great, obviously, but people are doing something off the back of it.
Yeah.
So people are texting me or leaving a review and going, because of your words, this is what I've done. And so these things that, you know, they're kind of already inside of us. I mean, Ebony, you've already said about the shoes that you've got. Mm-hmm. We've already got a rough idea about what we need and what we don't need or what is enough.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we just need someone else to tell you that it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically all it is. It's just the story of the last kind of 4-5 years. And just to show people that if you do get rid of your stuff, everything's going to be okay. And actually, if you do get rid of it, imagine what you can achieve with all that extra time, money, resources, energy, health.
Yeah.
Anything is possible.
Yeah.
That's where we are today.
Yeah, that's great. I love how you took your experience and you shared your story in the form of a book. And now it's helping other people to change their narratives and make positive impacts in their lives. That's wonderful. I love that. And you mentioned values, how a traditional publishing house didn't really align with your values. And I was thinking of values before you even mentioned it, because I feel like if you're clear on what your values are, because I didn't even really know what my values were until I was interviewing someone like I'm talking to you a month ago. And, you know, she brought up her values and we talked and I said, I don't even know what mine are. But once you're clear on what your values are, that will really help you to see what is it in your life that you don't need, like all the extra, you know, stuff that's not aligning with your values, you can get rid of, right? I feel like, yeah, I think of when I was accumulating a lot of stuff. I really wasn't clear on what I valued.
And exactly the same. And that resonates massively. It's because we don't know what adds value.
Yeah.
So we just collect stuff until the stuff tells us what we're supposed to value.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Are we listening to what society tells us we should value, right? You should value.
Yeah. There's a blog somewhere that will tell us. So yeah, we wait until our network tells us, until we, you know, until an advert tells us, our staff tells us. But yeah, again, just stopping and pausing, getting off the hamster wheel for a little bit to find that out can be quite an eye-opener, can be quite life-changing for people. So we talk about values in the book as well. And exactly, you know, such an amazing story, similar to yours, is like, I didn't know what mine were. I had no idea.
Right, yeah.
So how am I supposed to know what job I want to do or where I want to go or who I want to be if I didn't know what my values were? So that's what happens when you get consumed by stuff. Mm-hmm. You just end up losing a real picture of who you are or who you want to be.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the process of accumulating stuff in our lives sometimes is very much linked with addiction, right? We're addicted to shopping. We're addicted to people. We just like to accumulate lots and lots of people in our lives and always be around people. And so how, in your book, do you touch on addiction, or have you ever worked with someone where this was an issue and you had to kind of get through the addiction to help them to declutter?
Yeah, there's a little bit in there about being addicted to being busy.
Mm-hmm.
So in an organizational setting, again, this kind of goes back to what kind of the psychology behind why. Because to a certain extent, people have got a certain amount of control over how busy they are.
Mm-hmm.
In the main, there'll be certain things that you will need to do. I mean, if you're a doctor and you need to see X amount of patients, there's a necessity there because people's lives are at stake, right? But most of us are not doctors. Most of us are not firefighters. So for those of us who do work in an organizational setting or, you know, or wherever that is, we have a certain amount of control, but we fill our diary and we fill our days with busy work.
Yeah.
And the reason why we do that potentially is that the more busier that we are, the more important we believe we are.
Yeah.
And so who are we giving off that vibe to? The boss, our peers, the senior people across the field. Because in the past, what were we rewarded for? Working hard, right?
Yeah.
And so working hard has been connected to reward.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always work really hard because we believe we're going to get rewarded for it. And we may, financially, with status. But the cost to that can be your health, your energy, your relationships, your time, your diet, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you find out what your values are, you might find that actually, you know, traveling, adventure, relationships, all of that stuff are more important than the status, than the money and stuff like that. So yeah, literally a lot of people, I say about 90% of the people that I work with in an organizational setting are some form of busy. Mm. So busy that the word busy doesn't really cut it anymore.
Mm.
They're super busy or stacked or something like that. And so what I tend to do is I remove them out of their busy life, spend an hour with me, half hour, whatever it is, and we don't talk about work.
Mm.
No, we don't talk about stuff. We talk about values, motivations, life goals, what it is that people want to achieve. And actually they get that time to just just calm.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, the mind gets more, it gets clearer. You get a little bit more clarity around what it is that's important. And, you know, maybe the back-to-back meetings for 8 hours, 9 hours a day becomes less important.
Right.
So I put them back in their business as usual setting, and they might look at their calendar and go, yeah, I'm going to reduce that meeting from an hour to half an hour. I'm not going to go to that one because I don't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the view of me being there is to be present is not to be doing anything. It's just to show my face.
Yeah.
And so if we all had that, this is never going to happen, right? But if we all had that attitude to work, companies would have less people off sick, which would probably save them a load of money in insurance fees. They would get their money back because people were happy, content, working the hours that they wanted to work, they were capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And they would only be working on the cream of the crop, the actual stuff that was super important, not wasting their time, you know, 3 hours a day answering emails.
Mm-hmm.
Unless answering your emails is your job. Of course, that's really important.
Yeah.
So people being addicted to being busy is one of the themes I'm working on with people at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally relate to that. It's almost like, as you said earlier, if you're busy, it means that you're important or that you have some value if you're busy. And it's because I'm a teacher, so I get, you know, summer breaks and winter breaks, and so I'm on summer break now. And before I leave on break, all my colleagues are always asking. We're always asking each other, "What are you doing? What are you going to do on your break? You're going to travel. And I always say, "I'm not doing anything."
Yeah,
yeah. I love not doing anything, because during, you know, when school's in session, I'm just like literally, I'm going to work. I have a long commute to work, and then I around the kids. Well, not this year, but even during COVID, I was still commuting because we had to be on campus while the kids were at home, and then commuting back home, and then just starting the whole thing all over again. When I have this time during summer to just sit and literally like do nothing, like not have to do anything, it's so relaxing. But sometimes I find myself feeling like, shouldn't I be doing something? Like, you know, like I'm just sitting here watching
TV
or reading a book. Like, shouldn't I be doing something? But no, I need this time to relax. And there's no shame in that. No shame in that.
Yeah. No, it's a skill. It really is a skill. And it's becoming a bit more disciplined act now to stop, because you don't always have to be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think we're designed to always be on the go. I was talking to someone the other day, and again, going back to metaphors, Ebony's like, everyone says, how's life? 100 miles an hour.
Mm.
100 miles an hour. And I was like, when did that become the average speed limit?
Yeah.
All right. It's like, because again, you increase the risk of, you know, crashing and burning, right?
Reckless. 100 miles per hour is reckless.
It is reckless, right?
Yeah.
But people use that as a metaphor. It's 100 miles an hour. But again, is that a smokescreen? Is that a projection of, if I tell Ebony that I'm at 100 miles an hour and I'm super busy, will she then think I'm important?
Mm.
Because your average Joe won't go 100 miles an hour. They won't work 15-hour days, things like that. Yes, I understand it's different depending on the industry you're in, because you're a teacher, right? So people rely on you for your effort. But I will always challenge people about, I bet there might be one thing that you can stop doing in your work life. It might be the smallest thing, but there might be one thing in there. And if you're able to reduce or remove one thing in your work life, that gives you 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour back that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
And then what that does, similar to what we were saying before, it gives you that little bit of time to just stop and have a little bit of clarity. And maybe there's another half hour somewhere else the week after that I can stop doing this, or, you know, reduce the meeting, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then over time, you start to rebuild and redesign the amount of time and energy you spend at work, doing work,
mm-hmm.
you know, in work, whatever it is. So there's always that kind of way that we can try and move the dials a little bit. If I turn this down a little bit, what's going to happen?
Right. Yeah.
If I reduce the, this is never going to happen, right? But if I reduce the class time by 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen? Does that mean kids get into the classroom on time, no messing about, you do the thing and they leave. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know the answers to everything. It's just this way of, this kind of minimalist mindset way of thinking is by always looking at what can I get rid of? What can I do less of?
Right. Yeah.
For the betterment of everyone around me.
Right. I think that's a really important question to ask is what, how, like, look at the time that you're investing in whatever activity that you're doing and ask yourself, is this sufficient time? Is it like enough time or is it too much time? Or where can I possibly trim off time and where can I reinvest that, you know, time that I'm trimming off? I mean, yeah, I think a lot of us, if we asked ourselves that question, we would add so much more clarity because we would be investing in the things that really mattered, right? Our time and things that really mattered. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. We are almost out of time here. Wow. Yes.
Wow. That's really quick.
Yes. This has been great. Tell us where we can find you.
Yeah. So I am on, believe it or not, I am on social media. So in all the same places, you know, Twitter, Instagram, etc. Just search for Chris Lovett and look for the guy with big hair and that'll be me. LinkedIn is another one at the moment, so I use LinkedIn quite a bit. So you come and find me on there if you want to connect. The book is available, Discovery of Less. It's everywhere you buy books, so go out, enjoy the story. It's kind of funny as well because, you know, the stuff that we've talked about today, Ebony, it can get quite serious, right? It's, you know, some of the topics we talk about, like stress and attachment, they're not light-hearted topics, but what I've tended to find is that there's quite a few people out there already that talk about serious stuff. We don't need any more serious stuff at the moment. We need a little bit more lighthearted stuff going on. Yeah. Everyone needs a bit of a break, a bit of a laugh, right? So you can buy this book and you can really get into it and have a laugh of it along the way. So Discovery of Less is out now. Go and grab it on Amazon or wherever you go buy books.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chris. This was wonderful. I know a lot of people get like turned off by the word minimalist because they think it just means get rid of everything so that you're just left with like a chair, a table, and a rug. But we're not talking about just getting rid of stuff for the sake of getting rid of stuff. We're talking about decluttering your life. And that simply means to get rid of the stuff that you don't need, the stuff that's no longer serving you. Do you really need 10 pairs of jeans that look like the same pair? Do you really need 10 magazine subscriptions when you don't read any of them? So it's just all these things that we've kind of gotten used to being in our space that they're just taking up space, right? They're not serving us. So I hope that this episode has inspired you to just take a second look at your closet, take a second look at the thoughts that are running through your ideas, right? Because sometimes we can clutter our mind with ideas that are no longer serving us, and just start to slowly let go of the things that are holding you down. I personally think after I interviewed Chris, I went to my closet and got rid of a lot of clothes, like a lot of clothes. Clothes that didn't even fit me anymore from like in my 20s, and they weren't too small, they were actually too big. So it's just it's like, and these were things that were kind of stuffed in the back of my closet that I just had forgotten about. So declutter your life and follow Chris on all his social media, visit his website, buy his book. Of course, it's like the big thing, right? Buy his book. And in the meantime, you visit zazo.com and sign up for my newsletter. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood and Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I will see you next week when I talk to another fabulous person. Bye-bye.